I never once thought that maybe because they lived in America that their belief systems were changing too.
What are my values? What do I really want to do? Time isn't running out.
My journey gives me a different perspective on life. Everyone is like that.
I kind of feel a little more fearless in chasing music all the way.
I want you to learn that there's a difference between speaking poorly about your parents and speaking clearly about things that are affecting you.
The fulfillment is not going to come without hard work.
You know in your heart kind of who you are.
It's the right choice. It's 100% the right choice.
When you're they see like those questions.
Teaching schools,
you study in Chennai.
There's like a deeper meaning behind all of this. Like it's how you were raised, what you were taught, what you were conditioned to believe.
This is the Desi Condition. Good morning, everyone. It is a lovely Saturday morning. Well, I don't know if I should say good morning. I don't know where you are or when you are right now, but it's a lovely Saturday morning for me. This is a Desi Condition. My name is Tanushree. Today, we are joined by psychologist / relationship expert, Dr. Vijayatha Sin. She is here today to talk to us about some of the common issues, particularly relationship issues that she has seen in her South Asian clients. So things like trusting yourself, understanding boundaries, the idea of reparenting, and kind of just how South Asians tend to treat therapy in general, which I'll let her talk more about. But I'm really excited for you to be here today.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here and talk to you about this. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Awesome.
I actually, I don't know if you know this, but late last week, so like a few days ago, we just started like a relationship segment on the Desi Condition. And we're using it as a time to explore relationship trauma, how mental health can affect relationships, attachment theory. And all of this stuff is like, in our segment in particular, it's geared more towards romantic relationships. But as you obviously know, like a lot of these things translate to all kinds of relationships, right? I feel like this is just great timing that you're here and we're all doing this.
Yeah, I'm really excited to do this.
Yeah, for sure. So can you maybe start off a little bit about yourself, how you got into the space that you work in?
Sure. So I'm a clinical psychologist and relationship expert, and I have a therapy practice in New York called Therapy Couch NYC. And I primarily help my clients, many of who are South Asian, understand the unspoken rules of relationships so that they can figure out how to have more happy, peaceful, purposeful lives. So these are people who are otherwise very successful in their careers and are really high achieving, but are struggling in their love life or in their relationships with friends and family. So what I've learned over the 15 something years that I've been working with individuals and couples is how important our personal, romantic, and family relationships are to our well-being. I mean, they really are pivotal to our sense of how we are in the world and how successful we are, how confident we feel, how accomplished we feel. So if there's some part of relationships or there's some aspect of angst associated with our love lives, that is for sure going to be like a thorn in the road in terms of us feeling fulfilled and happy and really being able to feel accomplished in terms of everything else that we're doing. So what kind of got me into all of this, what got me into psychology is the idea that like our minds are way more mysterious and enigmatic than we may realize. And I think that for those of us who have often been confused by how we feel or had an experience and didn't quite know what to do with it or suddenly felt surprised by our emotions, there's this idea that there's so much more happening that we're aware of. And so the more we can tune in to that frequency and kind of increase our awareness of what's happening in our emotional lives, the more we can kind of use that to be able to do all the great things that we want to do and have all the healthy, wonderful relationships that we want to have. So that's a little bit about what kind of keeps me interested and why I'm so happy and excited to work with my clients.
That's such a beautiful description of just why you love doing the thing that you love. It's like very, it's very obvious to me that you're very, like I could know nothing about you and hear only that. And I would just be like, okay, I trust this person. Like this person knows what
Thank
they're
you.
So what are some of the common issues that people come in with?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people, I think, I mean, and this is not specific to COVID times, but I think that a lot of people in general struggle with a sense of who they are, how they're working in the world, and what's happening in their lives, that something kind of keeps tripping them up, whether it's a relationship issue in terms of like, a romantic relationship issue. Like, I keep choosing the wrong kind of people. I don't know what's happened. I don't know why that is. Or why is it that I can't find someone who loves and respects me and gives me what I want and need because I'm so ready to do that for them? Or how do I solve this problem that keeps coming up in my relationship with my spouse or with my partner, and get them to really understand what I'm saying? You know, or we have these issues that keep coming up over and over again, and we have so much history together and we can never get past it. So there is this sense of stuff that's happening in the present day, but a lot of it is a function of like the stuff that has come before. Mm-hmm. And so we keep trying to like solve what's coming up now. We keep trying to like problem solve and do what we call like, you know, symptom serve. But eventually we have to be able to get to the crux of certain issues, and they're not always about what's happening right now. So it's also helping people understand that we have to look at the context. Like, there's a history to you. You know, you have a past, you have, you know, 20 something years of who you are based on your experiences, your life circumstance, your parents, your family, your culture, your race, your ethnicity, your religion. So all of those things play a big role in terms of who you are today. So we have to situate you in all of that to understand who you are so that we can kind of help you figure out how to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. So what are some of the cultural contributors to maybe, for example, why people feel like they can't necessarily find the right person for them, or they're finding the wrong people for them? Where does all that stuff come from?
So I think that for those of us who come from cultures where family is really important, and for most of us, like, families might be important, but there are some cultures, and I think I'm speaking now more particularly to Asian and South Asian cultures, where there is this stress on family and you know, the what will people say kind of idea. So we have learned over time, those of us who have grown in those kinds of cultures, we learn over time to kind of dim our own voices and really highlight the voices of other people. And that can really trip us up, because I think over time we lose sense of who we are. What is it that we want? What are our values? What are our goals? How is what we're doing right now stay in line with what we think we want or we need or we deserve? And we fall into this trap of going for what we think is okay by other people. And I think that that can certainly be the case where other people can help inform us of our choice in a partner. But I think at the end of the day, we have to have a really strong sense of who we are and what is it that we want, so that then we can make optimal choices in terms of who best kind of fits that and is in line with that.
Yeah, I think people really underestimate how much their childhood affects their adulthood decisions, right? Even if it's something like, you know, going into a career you weren't supposed to go into, it really does affect you, especially when you're living in a culture where you're expected to, how do I put this? It's a very collectivist culture, right? What are your thoughts on that? How is that affected? Whether people even seek therapy or recognize that they need help with a certain issue?
Yeah, so I think that for most people, and again, I'm thinking more about South Asian mm-hmm. culture. I think for a lot of people, there's this sense of one, that my issues and my problems are not important enough. And also that, you know, I have so much to be grateful for. And I think that's something that we kind of, overall, I think we are kind of fed this idea that there's so much to be grateful for. There's so much to be grateful for, or, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing special about your life. Like, everybody has certain problems. And that can certainly be the case, that everybody else also has problems. But there's something inherent to understanding your own struggle. And if we kind of downplay that, and if we minimize that, then we're also in some ways in denial of that and never really addressing that. So some of this has to do with understanding that I am struggling with something, or something keeps coming up that's getting in the way. And I've tried to kind of stay within the family domain, because I think this is the other place where culture kind of comes in, which is like, lean on the important people in your life, like lean on your family, lean on, like, keep things within the family. Don't take things outside the family, family secrets, so on and so forth. So I think there's this idea that, you know, I have so many people I can lean on, so I should, like, this should be fine. Like, they know me the best. They'll understand my problems the best. Can someone on the outside really understand me, or really understand what I'm dealing with? And so there's this, sometimes this idea of not really being sure about how therapy can help, if it can help at all, how having someone on the outside will help mediate, mitigate, like, some of the things that we're struggling with as a couple. And so I think there can be a lot of time that is spent, and quite frankly, wasted, in trying to do everything else besides seeking out help with someone who doesn't know you, and where you would have to invest in getting to know them, and them having to understand your problems before they can help you. So there's also the sense of not quite understanding how mental illness kind of can impact us, and seeing. So we're completely okay with going seeing a doctor if we have any kind of physical symptoms, but if we have some kind of anxiety or depression or some other issue that's kind of coming up, lack of self-confidence or an eating disorder or something else, then it's almost like, well, is this really a problem? I mean, doesn't everybody else struggle with it? Like, is this something I really need to go to someone for? So there's a little bit of lack of awareness and also the stigma that comes with getting help.
I've always seen it as a little bit of an identity crisis. And I'm obviously, like, not the expert here on this topic, but I don't know, for me personally, I guess I've seen it as, like, this identity crisis, because I've always felt like it's exactly what you said. Why are my problems, like, so important? They're not, right? I exist as part of this web. And I think it's fine to, like, see yourself as part of a web. It's a good thing, right? I mean, you're part of a family, you're part of a society. But sometimes I think in our culture, and I don't think I'm alone in this, but I tend to kind of get a little bit lost in that, and, like, think of how I am supposed to be kind of, like, subservient to all of it in, like, mm-hmm. a really negative way. And think about how to work towards more, like, the greater good, rather than thinking about how to work towards what is good for actually myself and what is fulfilling for myself.
Yeah. So I think there is this sense of kind of wanting to fit in and not stick out too much. So in some ways, that can be about, what does it really mean for me to recognize something to be a problem? Does that then mean that I'm different from other people? Does that mean I'm in some ways not as healthy as I thought?
Yeah, and it's like the moment you choose to, like, go to therapy, it's this big family secret. And it's something that is belittled because you chose to make that decision to go to therapy, and now your family knows, and it's a problem. It's not something that's encouraged at all.
Yeah. And, you know, to some extent, I think that that's so unfortunate, because, you know, we really, you know, back in the day, even in India, we had people outside the family that we used to see, visit, consult with. Mm-hmm. Things weren't always in the family. Like, there were, you know, there were elderlies in the family, or, you know, like, grandparents, maybe perhaps, but also I'm thinking about, like, gurus. A lot of people, you know, we used to use their wisdom to help us make sense of, understand what it was that we were going through. In fact, I remember, like, being part of, my aunt and uncle used to visit this guru in Bombay, and I used to sometimes join them. And so many of the questions are people talking about their personal problems, but phrasing it as a, what do you do if? So not really talking about, you know, I'm struggling with this issue, this problem, but, you know, what do you do if you are, you know, you are wanting, seeking something, and you feel that other people in your family don't? So placing it very generally, contextually, and still seeking answers and feeling like they can reach out to other people who might be able to look at the problem in a different way than the people already in their lives might be looking at it. So we historically have, we have this context of being able to seek help from other people, people that we consider to be wise, people that we consider to be learned, people we consider to be, to have had seen the world and know a different part of the world and understand things differently, mystics. So there is that basis, but I think how it kind of translates to our everyday lives and maybe lives here is that we don't have access to that. So for sure that can create some kind of suspiciousness in terms of, why do you need to go talk to someone? Like, why can't you talk to people at home? Don't you trust us? It's almost seen like a violation of trust.
That's such an interesting point, that there is actually this network of people that culturally, historically, we have referred to for things like advice, right? Like the exact same things that we go to therapy for. That's such an interesting point that I had never thought about before.
Yeah, so it's fascinating that that we also think that if we talk about our problems, it will suddenly make them more alive, as if they're not already there. Mm-hmm. And if we talk about our problems, then that means that we're some way less than or undeserving, or that now there's a problem with us. And so I think it's very careful. It's important to be careful about how we navigate this idea of how we appear to other people, because I think that also can sometimes be the focus of what is the impression that we're giving other people vis-a-vis what we know to be true about our own lives and how much in the crap that might be. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like maybe it's like a blurred boundary, because the therapists are people who, like, I don't know, this is weird to say, but like they walk among us, right? They're just regular people. They're not like a guruji or something. Gurujis, they very much don't. Their lifestyle is very different than that of like a therapist in America, right?
Yes, for sure.
And so maybe it's like, maybe that's part of it too. It's like you don't live in, like, you're not like this revered figure. You're actually just a regular person. So why am I going and telling this regular person about all of these issues?
And oftentimes I get that question. What I tell people is that going to someone who's outside your family or culture also in some ways means that they can offer you a perspective of feedback that you may have missed, or that might not have been presented to you before, or that is not, you know, that is not in line with what the family wants from you. It's very hard for people who love you to give you objective feedback and advice, because I think that they get caught up in the web of what they want to see happen for you, and their desires for you, and their hopes and dreams for you. And if that's not in line with how you want to lead your life, then you can still feel like, oh my God, what do I do with this? So I think going and seeing someone, going seeing a therapist, going seeing someone outside the family also means opening yourself up to a fresh perspective and a different way of seeing the world. And yes, that can mean that they might not fully see you and recognize you, but that can also mean that they can offer you a different way of looking at the problem, a different way of understanding how to approach the problem, and offering you something that might be more in line with your needs as opposed to your family's wants, needs, desires.
So, question for you. How do South Asians, once they get to therapy, what does that look like in your experience?
So I think that initially there is a little bit of hesitation and suspiciousness about how is this going to help? And this is, I think, more true of, I think, like first generation South Asians here in the US, like people who've like immigrated here, I think tend to have a little bit more wariness about the ability for someone to understand them. And rightfully so. I mean, I remember when I first came to the country and I was looking for a South Asian therapist, I couldn't find one. And when I did go to therapy, I often found that I had to explain so much about how I thought about things and why certain things were important to me and why I did things the way I did. So I think there's a way in which we all want to be, our primary need is to be understood. And then I think the question is, will that other person understand what it is that we're bringing to the table and our unique problems and issues, because our culture is really so different from culture here. So initially there might be a little bit of that hesitation and sometimes suspiciousness, but I'm also seeing a lot more, especially with the younger population, because I work with a lot of millennials and young adults, and there is so much more openness to the idea of wanting help. And there's almost like a thirst, like I need someone else to tell me how to make sense of this, because I'm so fed up with what my parents are saying, what my family is saying, what my aunt and uncle is saying, what I think the culture at large is saying about how I should approach this problem. So I need to think about this differently, and I want to understand myself. So I really, really appreciate that, that despite, you know, whatever hesitation they might be coming in with, once we kind of get started, there is this level of acceptance and openness and, oh my God, like, I'm so grateful that I can talk to you about all the stuff that I'm experiencing with my husband that I cannot go talk to my friends and family about because of the fear of how they're going to judge me. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool. But there's also this idea of like waiting. And this is sometimes I often tell my clients, like, why have you waited till the last minute to get help, right? Because it's like, we've tried everything. We've thrown everything at this problem. Nothing has stuck. And so now therapy is like the last resort for trying to figure out how to deal with this problem. And so much time has been wasted and so much has happened in the meanwhile that it can sometimes be really hard to intervene in that moment of like crisis management. So I often tell people that it's that, you know, don't wait on a problem or an issue, that if you're having an issue with something or struggling with something, don't wait till it's gotten really bad, fallen off the tracks before you address it. Try, you know, and this is true of life in general. If you try and tackle a problem, you know, the best point of intervention is actually prevention. So if you can try and move into the problem before it's even kind of formulated, that's a great way to get started. But also, as you see it come up, if you can start then, as opposed to waiting years, years and years till the problem has really entrenched itself and really like taken on a life of its own, it becomes much harder to then make the changes.
So I think I know how you're about to answer this question, but I think that I should ask it anyway for the listeners. Do you think that everybody should go to therapy regardless of it, whether there's something going on, even if it's not like some kind of crisis management situation where they're coming in at like, you know, as a last resort? Do you think that everybody should go to therapy?
So I think that everybody should engage in introspection and self-discovery. And I think for different people, this can be different things. And what I'm really asking for is for people to really step back and look at their lives and examine the choices that they're making more consciously, as opposed to just going through the day to day to day without really taking stock of what's happening. What am I doing? Is this in line with what I want? Do I really need this? Is this good for me? How does this serve me? When we don't step back and ask those questions of ourselves, we're just moving through life mindlessly. So I think that for some people that can be, you know, of course we're in COVID, but for a lot of people that can be, you know, taking time off and really taking some time to, I don't know, travel, or on a daily basis doing introspective work about, you know, what are my goals? What are my values? What do I want to accomplish? What do I think is getting in the way? Just sitting back and having a conversation with ourselves. And this is part of, reestablishing a connection with ourselves and understanding that, do we really know who we are? Do we really know who we are, what we want? Where is that coming from? And why have we kind of allowed ourselves to do what other people are doing or think that what other people are doing is what should dictate how we are leading our lives? And yes, for some people, this means going to therapy to really get an awareness and understand our own voice and who we are. Because it's, you know, the more time that we spend going through life without having a sense of the direction we're going in, that to me is the more time we're wasting.
You talk about doing individual introspective work. Well, my first question for you, and you kind of touched on this, is what that would look like. And then also how to trust whether you're actually doing that work in a way that's beneficial for you and not just in a way that's going to ultimately benefit, you know, your social bubble, right? Just because before we talked about how, you can kind of lose a sense of identity when you keep thinking about yourself in terms of family or in terms of society. I think my question for you really, I guess, is about how to make sure that you're doing the real introspective work when perhaps your sense of identity may be a little bit skewed.
Sure. So I think that we have to, so self-awareness and self-discovery is kind of like building a muscle, right? So it takes time to be able to get to a place where you can lift that, like, you know, 80 pound or whatever dumbbell. So understanding that we have to start getting into the practice of going to the gym. So we have to get into the practice of lifting small weights before we'll be able to get to that big weight, that big goal that we want. And so thinking about what does that look like? So in the day to day, I'm a big believer of the practice of mindfulness, and I really appreciate what mindfulness and meditation, how they help us in kind of understanding how to take a backseat to our emotions and our experiences and not be so reactive. Because I think oftentimes we're just moving in a way where things happen and we react and things happen and we react. And so it's about trying to lead a life that's not so reactive, but being able to observe and understand what's coming up for us, how that's showing up, what that means. Is that something we want to pay attention to? Is that something we want to ignore? And it can be as simple. So just to give you an example, I think one of my clients was struggling with having been raised in the US and living in the States, but having an arranged marriage, and then thinking about how much of this is what I want versus how much of this is what my family wants from me. What are my hesitations and concerns about going into this arranged marriage? How much do I know about the other person? How much does the other person know about me? What's my understanding of love? What's my understanding of relationships and connections? What are my goals for a marriage? What are my goals for partnering with another person? Is that what I'm looking for? So when we allow ourselves the opportunity to sit with our thoughts, whether that's coming in the form of a meditative experience, or mindfulness experience, or some kind of emotional expression, or even in therapy, when we're sitting with our thoughts and thinking about what is it that I really want? And is this the direction that I want to go in? As opposed to, yes, you know, Papa's saying I should do this, so I should do this. Of course, he knows what's good for me. Of course, my family knows what's right for me. So I'll let them make this decision. And then being caught into it and then being like, what the hell? Like, this is not what I expected. This is not what I wanted. And now I'm feeling so resentful about what's happened. And not only am I feeling resentful towards my family, I'm feeling resentful towards my partner. I'm feeling resentful towards my in-laws. I'm feeling resentful towards myself because have I let myself down in the process, right? So I think that somewhere developing a sense of what it is that we want, who we are, and how we're getting there is really, really key.
I think a lot of the problem sometimes with therapy also is that people can be pretty impatient. And I like the analogy you make with, well, you have to start with the lighter weight dumbbells, right? This is what it takes, right? I mean, you can't, I don't know. I think that sometimes in our culture, it's such a results-driven culture.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel that way, but I feel that it's a pretty results-driven culture in that we are always demanding results, whether it's in terms of school or in terms of finding the correct match for, you know, for marriage or whatever. All right, like now you have to do this, now you have to do that, now you have to like have the kids, whatever. And things feel very result driven and not process driven.
Yeah.
And I think that can be an issue when seeking therapy or getting into therapy and maybe not seeing it through.
Sure. So I think, you know, you're absolutely right when you talk about like our ideas and expectations being on the basis of what the outcome is. Like, what is the product? Like, what am I getting out of this? So, you know, that seems inherently clear when you go to a doctor and you're like, hey, I'm having trouble with a headache or I'm having trouble with sleep. And they're like, okay, take this and like feel better. And it's not the same with therapy. And I think that can sometimes, because there is this lack of awareness about what therapy is and what is the process of therapy. So I'll often have people be like, I have no idea what therapy is. And I need you to kind of explain to me how it works, which I love, because to me, then it's like, okay, you're willing to understand that, you're willing to accept that you don't know much about something. That's a great first step. So that also means understanding that if we're approaching therapy in the midst of a crisis, how quickly are we expecting things to change? What are the results that we're hoping to see happen? And also kind of understanding that the process of change, when we're trying to change something as enigmatic as our mind and our emotional experiences in life, it takes a little bit of an investment in time, because it's not a destination that you can get to tomorrow. It's something that you have to continually be on the road with. So understanding that, and that doesn't mean that you may not experience some relief in the way that you feel. For sure, I think what's most surprising about people is, oh my God, like I didn't realize how quickly I can understand and see things differently in the way I'm fighting with my partner, or how quickly I can recognize how I'm doing to escalate the fight, or how quickly I'm now understanding what are some things I need to do to self-soothe myself. So I think that there are for sure things that you can take away very quickly from the process, but the larger pieces of the puzzle come together over time. And that's something that you have to be willing to be patient with.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps a lot of it comes from having to kind of reparent yourself. I think reparenting is something that South Asians talk about a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, the reality is that as much as our parents might have loved us and cared for us and given us everything that we want and we need, you know, part of the human experience is that we are going to be in some ways, we might have missed some things that we needed over time as a function of either our family systems not being able to give it to us, or because of our own needs or our own unique ways of being in the world. So this idea of understanding that it now becomes our responsibility as an adult to find a way to have those needs met, that for sure we may look upon our family to take care of us in some ways and provide us with the things that we need or we may have missed. But now as an adult, it becomes my pivotal responsibility to parent myself. And by that, I mean, really understanding what is it that my inner child needs? What is it that my inner child felt, experienced? What were some moments of feeling forgotten, excluded, left behind, not seen, misunderstood, or taken a step further? Like, what were the parts that felt punished, or what were the parts that felt neglected, or what were the parts that felt abused? And so how am I now going to try and take care of some of that as an adult? Because, Our emotional lives and our relationships with other people are so much a function of that person that has emerged over time. And so when there are certain things that are crucially lacking, they will for sure show up in our relationships with other people. So unless we learn to recognize that there are those wounds or gaping holes sometimes, unless we learn to recognize them, understand them, and maybe perhaps fix them or change them, that they will show up repeatedly in our relationships with other people, and we'll always be wondering why, and always be looking for other people to solve the dilemma of how we feel about ourselves.
So you talk about reparenting yourself, talk about finding your own voice. How do we learn to trust that voice, and how do we learn to trust that voice versus kind of manage the guilt that people tend to have about what their parents wanted for them versus what they really want to be doing with their lives?
Yeah. So I feel like if we come to a place where we're not certain about what's showing up for us, so I really believe that intrinsically we all possess the knowledge and the wisdom to make the choices that are right for us. And if we kind of wait for that to emerge, that will emerge. It also means, having the confidence that when we arrive on this planet, and this is like going on a slight spiritual bent, but when we arrive on the planet, we really have all that is within us that we need to be able to move forward in life. So it's a question of how that gets nurtured. And how we kind of learn to recognize the things about that process that then bring us to a place of being able to really value our voice and find the confidence. And so for those of us who grew up in families where maybe perhaps we learned to put more weight on other people's thoughts and perspectives and learned to kind of dim our own inner voice and intuition, it's a process of learning how to reconfigure that, where now we can put ourselves on the mic and really be tuned into what shows up. So, of course, this sounds very mysterious, and is it possible? And I think that yes, it is possible. And I think that this is again where therapy can help you, is if you're not sure about how you're thinking about something or how you're showing up, that's something that you can touch base with someone upon and be like, hey, this is how I'm seeing it. Does this seem right? And as a therapist, I kind of see that as my role, as part of my job, is to be able to help my clients be able to see the blind spots that they might be missing, and also help them be able to maybe change their perspective about certain things. Like, you're thinking about this problem in this way, and maybe you need to think about it in this completely other way that maybe you're missing, or there's a lot of resistance towards. So this is really where having someone else can be very, very helpful. And I think over time, then you just, it's like going to the personal trainer being like, why is this exercise, like, why is this not working for me? And they're like, when you're doing your squat, like your back seems to be coming up and you're sitting more in the front towards the back. So maybe you need to make this tweak and adjustment, and then you can do your squat a lot better. So it's kind of like that. Yeah, but I think it's fascinating, and it's so important. It's so important for us to do so that we are not always sitting in the place of feeling like things are happening to us, so that we can be a little bit more in the driver's seat about our lives.
A lot of what you're describing, like finding your own voice, finding your own identity and stuff, and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like you're kind of getting into the conversation of how to set up your own boundaries and figure out your own boundaries. And I think mm-hmm. South Asian culture, like, notoriously has this lack of boundaries. What's your experience with helping clients figure out what their boundaries are and set those up for themselves?
Yeah, so I think when from the beginning we are made aware of other people and the needs of other people before we have a sense of who we are, I think this shows up in an ability in thinking about what we want and what our goals are and what our aspirations are. So I think this can then translate to a lot of people pleasing and difficulty with really being assertive about our own needs. And so a lot of the work with clients who kind of have difficulty asserting who they are and wanting to please everybody. I want to keep everybody happy. I don't want to upset anybody. I'm really worried about what would happen if I said no to my mom about something, or, she wants me to go on and meet these, XYZ guys. And so I'm just doing it to please her. Or my dad wants my girlfriend to not come over because our culture kind of is not okay with it. So I just kind of go along with it. So, and that's all, it's great to be able to think about, like, that's a wonderful, fantastic thing when we're thinking about other people and we're not so selfish. And we're trying to kind of keep a sense of other people and their needs and not just focus so much on our needs. But I think for some of us, we can take it a step further, where then we're just looking at other people's needs and we completely leave behind our own needs. So boundaries here become important in the sense of figuring out, what am I okay with? What am I not okay with? What are some things that work for me? What are some things that don't work for me? And also understanding that, our parents grew up in a different time, in a different context. You know, some of them have changed culture, so they have moved from their country of origin to the United States. And that has meant that they have, in some ways, you know, and I say this often in my immigrant clients, is that we get stuck in time. It's like some part of us is there still in the year that we left. And then some part of us is here in the current day trying to like figure out how we're going to lead our lives. And meanwhile, life there is changing and growing and people are doing different things. But then we get stuck in that mindset of how things were when we left, how we were raised. And so it's really about being able to then reconcile with the idea that maybe our parents, you know, had different ideas about different things and they had different values. And it's okay for us to have different values. And it's okay for us to honor that we don't always have to kind of just do what other people are doing because we're told that that's the important thing to do. So yeah, for sure, boundaries are important in terms of understanding how we want other people to treat us and what we're willing to be okay with and where we're willing to kind of step and say, no, that's not okay.
Yeah, you're so right that sometimes people just get stuck in the year of how things were when they left. And so like you'll hear stories about people talking about their parents doing such archaic things. Meanwhile, things are not at all like how they think it is at home, which is so interesting. So we've been talking a lot about how boundaries look in terms of yourself and your family. Can you talk about the intersection of boundaries and the people that we choose to attach ourselves to outside of family?
Yeah, so I think for those of us who are very career driven and motivated to kind of like be entrepreneurs or move our business or even if it means the work that we're doing in our professional lives, I think it's about learning to recognize what we're okay with, what we're not okay with. So it could be something as simple as, you know, I have a client who saw his dad and his dad left for most of the day and came back at, you know, 10 p.m. and was maybe back in time just to say goodnight to him and his brother before they went off to bed. And so now for this client, understanding that that's not the relationship that I want to have with my kids. And so what are the boundaries that I'm going to put towards my work life and my family life so that my life looks differently for me? And in our romantic relationships, it's also about we oftentimes can see our parents and their relationship as a model for what we want to see in our own relationships. And so, again, kind of being mindful of, are we in line with that kind of thinking? Is what happened in our family between our parents, is that okay if that happens to us? Where would we set the boundary in terms of, no, that's not acceptable. It's not acceptable if you spend money that I have no idea where it's going and you're not being accountable to me in terms of the finances. Or it's that, you know, it's a different thing if how your parents resolved conflict was by not speaking to each other for days, weeks, and months, but no, that's not okay for me in my relationship. So it's also about understanding what works for you specifically and how that serves you. So I also tell people to not get caught up in the idea of things being good or bad or right or wrong, but really understanding like, how is this effective? How is this behavior effective? How is this mode of thinking effective? How is this way of being effective? Like, is it really helping me move along in my life in the direction that I want to, or is it getting in the way? And I think then when we can use that terminology, then we don't have to feel like we have to put someone else down in order to feel okay about ourselves.
Yeah, I feel like the conversation here is veering a little bit into cancel culture. I don't know if you agree, but not like canceling celebrity culture, but learning how to cut people out of your life who just aren't giving you, who aren't effective for you, for your emotional wellness.
Yeah, and I think it's, I think the first, before that happens, it's important to think about whenever we take something that seems very drastic from what we're doing, it's okay to sit back and think about, is this what I want to do? And is this what's going to be good for me? And is this what I need to do? Do I need to let go of this in order to be able to move in the direction that I want? And is that what feels right? And this is again the place where I can then use, I can for sure use people that I trust, the voices of other people that I trust to kind of help me understand this and see if I'm missing something. Because sometimes it can also be easy to just go down the path of, okay, this doesn't work for me, so I cut this off. And this doesn't work for me, so I cut this off. And this doesn't help me, so I don't do this. And so it can veer off into a path of avoidance. So we also want to be careful about not going too much in the direction of avoiding anything that creates discomfort or anxiety or painful or negative feelings. And we also want to be clear about, like, how is this affecting us? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, we've been talking a lot of this conversation has been about people who tend to want to serve the family values and everything. And, you know, I think it's important to recognize that it can happen in the other direction too.
Direction.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe I can ask you this now. What kind of advice do you have for people who are maybe like considering therapy, but feeling hesitant about it and maybe even having trouble finding a therapist? I think that can be a big problem, especially in like the American medical system.
Yeah,
it can be really hard to find a therapist. And so I guess my question for you is, how do you keep motivation in your search for a therapist?
So I think that finding a therapist is like, it's a relationship that's going to be so much more personal than any other professional that you might seek out, right? So in some ways, you also want to approach it in that way, which is that you're looking for someone who will be able to understand you, who will be able to offer you the things that you're looking for. So we again go back to that reflective question of what is making me reach out for therapy? Mm-hmm. What is it that I want? What kind of goals do I have? What am I hoping that someone can help me with? Because there are all kinds of therapists, and depending on, you know, their qualifications and their expertise, and they're all focusing on different things, and their style can be very, very different. So if you have a clear sense of what works for you, what you need help with, and what would be the best path for you, then in your search, you can be very clear about, okay, this is someone who kind of sort of seems to be, you know, doing what I need, or might offer me what I need. And therefore, as opposed to, you know, just being like therapist, you know, going to psychology today and just like, you know, seeing the sheet of like all the therapists and then just feeling completely flooded by all the options that are out there. So if you do a little bit of legwork in terms of trying to identify what's coming up for you, what's happening, what are you looking for help with, what kind of style you work best with, then that can really inform you in terms of the person that kind of shows up. And then, you know, take the opportunity to have a conversation with them. So you know, invest a little bit of time to talk to them about, you know, these are things that I'm looking for help with, and I get a sense of how they work. And then, you know, through the conversation, I feel like sometimes through the conversation, you know, whether someone can be a good fit for you, is a good match for you, will understand you. And sometimes, you know, it happens that once you start working with someone, you realize that, okay, maybe like all relationships, right? Like you start off and you're like, okay, this is going well. And then if somewhere you feel like, oh my God, this is exactly what I was looking for, then that allows you to kind of lean in with a little bit more vulnerability and openness. So I think this is key to therapy, is being willing to be vulnerable. And if we're not willing to be vulnerable, if we're not willing to be helped, if we're not willing to make the changes, because it's one thing to say, yes, I want to do this, and yes, I want to do this. But then when someone actually challenges you and tells you what to do, are you actually following up, or are you paying lip service to the idea of, yes, I need help? So it's really important to also be honest with yourself about whether you're ready to do that, and not just get someone on board to vent or complain to about, you know, life's problems and issues and all of that stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned different styles of therapy before. So what exactly does that mean?
So, you know, I think that clinicians can vary depending on, you know, their theoretical orientations, and that can then influence their level of interactiveness, collaborativeness in the treatment. You know, I can speak for myself. So for me, I think it's really key to work interactively with someone. And I see myself as a team member, that we are on the same team here about how we are going to impact, make changes in your life in the way that you want to. And so you have a big role to play, and I count on you to kind of be ready to come into session to talk about that and be there with me, you know, very much like a personal trainer. I'm going to be in there with you, telling you what I see and what I think you can do differently, and challenging you and guiding you through the process. And that doesn't mean that we can't have fun with it, and that it cannot, it's going to be a dull, boring, arduous process. It can be a fun, uplifting experience, depending on your level of playfulness, your level of creativity, your level of openness, your will, your ability to kind of go with the flow. All of those things impact then the process of therapy.
What are the reasons that people tend to leave therapy? Have you noticed?
Yeah. So I think that one of the things that I mentioned earlier, which is not being ready to take advice from someone else and make changes. So I think that for sure can come up, where we're not quite ready to do what is being asked of us, right? And that's okay. It's perfectly okay to be in a place where you're like, you know, I'm not quite sure I'm there yet. I know what I need to do, but I don't think I have everything within me to be able to do that right now. And that's fine. So if we need to take a break and for you to kind of work on the stuff that you need to work on before we can move further, that's fine. So I often have people kind of being like, you know, I think I have a few things I need to work on right now. And maybe, so then, you know, the idea is, okay, let's take a little bit of a break. Let's sit back, let's think about all the changes we've made thus far, where we're going, and see if we're ready for the next step. And then, of course, we have, you know, other stuff that can come up, such as we're focusing on this and this becomes a priority. And then suddenly something else comes up and that feels like a little bit more of a priority. And maybe I need to focus on that. And sometimes that can take us away from the process of therapy. So depending on, you know, what we're identifying as the main challenges that we're experiencing, it's okay to not be in therapy indefinitely, to be able to kind of, you know, make sure tweaks and adjustments in the stuff that we need help with, and feel like, okay, I think that this is good for now, and maybe I need to come back and revisit this later.
Okay, interesting. I think that we've covered a lot, but I wanted to ask you if there's anything else that I haven't asked you that you would like to express to our guests.
I think that the thing that I would want to leave people with is this idea of staying hungry and thirsty for understanding who they are, and not settling for just kind of going through the motions of life. Because I think that we end up then not paying attention to ourselves, and then that can hurt us and hurt other people. So to really, you know, that's something that we owe ourselves, is an opportunity to more truly and deeply understand ourselves. So
before we end, how can we find you?
Sure. So you can find me on my website, which is www.therapycouchnyc.com. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, Dr. Vijeta Singh. So you can find me there too.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so happy that you're coming into people's ears and telling them all of the wonderful things that you've had to say. And I hope that everybody got, I'm sure that anybody listening to this episode got something out of it. And if they're considering therapy, hopefully they go for it and are inspired now to understand why it's very important to do so. I want to thank you again for being on the show. I think this was really great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So that is the end of our episode. If you would like to reach out, you can email us at thedesicondition@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on Instagram and Facebook at thedesicondition. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and tell all your friends about this episode. Have a wonderful day.